We had a very pleasant time at the camp out last Friday evening and Saturday. And I know that while I was on my way out there on Friday, they were all watching the weather and expected this could get wet, but it never happened. And apparently I was talking to Mr. Braley, and he was explaining that the clouds just kind of broke up coming out of San Antonio, which I'm thankful for because we were right by a creek. So that could have been really interesting if you had 7 inches of rain. So anyway, it could have been a real gully washer and washed us all out with it. We had a very fine time, very pleasant atmosphere, and Camp Happy Hollow. It sounds kind of hokey, but it is a nice camp, and everybody enjoyed it, I think. And we had a good time of fellowship and some fun. And I know my wife beat all the boys in ping pong. And so after she'd defeated all the boys in ping pong, then I played her and beat her. So, but see, I waited till they wore her down. Then I took her on. So anyway, they were all thinking that she was a ringer because she was saying, well, really, I haven't played in years and years, and then she beats them all. So anyway, but I think everybody had a fun time, and it's a very nice group that we had out there. So hopefully we can do it again in the fall. Currently, the IRS is under scrutiny for using its powers to intimidate certain groups. This is a violation of the law. And it's interesting that that being a violation of the law, a representative of the IRS said the law doesn't matter. The law doesn't matter. We can do whatever we want. And as we think about that, the law may not matter to the IRS, but you know, for you and me and all of us as God's people, the law does matter. One of the chief criticisms of the Church of God by nominal Christianity is that we are fixated on or with the law. We're fixated on it. It's an obsession. And when we are attacked, we're referred to as Judaizers or Old Testament Christians. And we are seen as a group of people who place the law above everything. We place it above Christ. We place it above love for neighbor. And obviously, if you're making that statement, you don't understand the law, as we'll see as we go through this. We are seen as rigid, inflexible, and Pharisaical in our approach. And should we be surprised that large portions of Christianity are adamantly opposed to the law? Because to keep the law, you are trying to earn salvation, from their perspective. They see the law as the central problem for humanity, and that Jesus Christ came to fix that problem by nailing it to the cross. And unfortunately, this is a false view that has been foisted upon humanity. So as we consider the law, we must ask, why should the law be important to us? Why should we agree with the psalmist who says in Psalm 119:97, "Oh, how I love your law"? Why would we love the law? And more importantly, why is the law so important in God's scheme of things? Why is it so adamantly opposed by Satan? I might summarize God's view of the law, which is also our view, by saying that God believes in something called the rule of law. The rule of law. You may wonder, what do I mean when I say the rule of law? What do I mean by that? I really did not understand that concept until about the year 2000. I know in the year 2000, I was 49 years old, and I had never really understood this concept or even really come across it. But it is a fundamental thing to understand about that is important to God and all of us. At the end of my sermon, I hope that all of you will better understand the rule of law, and you will more clearly understand the importance of law to our lives, to the world, and to eternity. As you look at Hebrews chapter 13, verse 8, it says that Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And what does that mean? Does that mean that Jesus Christ never, under any circumstance, changes? He never changes. He will not change. Is that true? Just think about Sodom. It was God's intention to destroy Sodom because of its sinfulness. And Abraham confronted God and said, hey, you know, if there's 50 righteous people living in Sodom, will you destroy it? And God said, okay, if there are 50, no. And Abraham wasn't done and he kept working God down. Well, if there are 10, will you spare the city? God changed. God's intention in the time of Jonah was to destroy the city of Nineveh. It was an evil city. The Assyrians were an evil people. And God sent his prophet to confront the city. And the people listened to the prophet. Amazingly, these are Gentiles. They don't know anything about God. And they humble themselves before God. Everybody in the city, including their animals, all fasted and besought God that he would spare them. And he did. So God will change. As you think about Christ, would he always wear the same things? If Christ came back to 21st century America, would he dress in robes? Nope, he'd dress like we would. After church, he'd probably have on shorts and a t-shirt. Christ couldn't do that. Oh, yeah, he could. If he were in the flesh, he could do that. He would dress like we would. God, he does change. What the verse is speaking of are crucial qualities of character. When it comes to judgment, he's always just. When it comes to truth, he always tells the truth. The Bible tells us that he is the God who cannot lie. And he tells it, and when it comes to mercy, his mercy never fails. So God's adherence to the rule of law is summarized in one word, and that is love. Everything he does is based upon love and outgoing concern for other people. That's the way he is. He never deviates from it. That's why he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So God is consistent in his character. He follows the rule of law. Man, however, is anything but the same yesterday, today, and forever in his character, and that's the reason that our world is filled with so many problems. Now, I've mentioned the idea of the rule of law, and I would now like to discuss this concept for a few minutes from a physical perspective. I mentioned the IRS at the beginning, and it's just an illustration of the problem. And it's not just with the IRS. It's much more widespread and universal than that. But we want to look at this. I'm going to look at this from a physical point of view because it helps to illustrate things for us and help us to better understand the concept. A writer by the name of Lillian R. Bevere lays out the subject well in an essay entitled Civilization, Progress, and the Rule of Law. How important is the rule of law to your life? And she writes, throughout history, adherence to the rule of law has sustained civilization and nourished progress. Human freedom and the material prosperity that it enables owe their very existence to the rule of law. So what this writer is saying is that for civilization to exist in a positive form, for that civilization to progress and prosper, the rule of law must be in effect. It governs that society. It governs that civilization, and it paves the way for that society to be stable, that society to prosper. And whether you know it or not, the reason that you have been able to enjoy the benefits of the United States and to prosper in this country is because of the rule of law. It is a blessing, as we'll see. So let's define the rule of law more fully. The rule of law signifies the constraint of arbitrariness in the exercise of government power. It means, applying it to the current context, that the IRS cannot single out particular groups that they disagree with and attack them, use their powers to attack them, because they disagree. There's no legal reason for them to go after that particular group. But that's called arbitrariness. Hey, we're going to attack these people, but we like these people, we're going to leave them alone. When you begin doing that, you have problems in your world. The same writer goes on to say it means that the agencies of official coercion should, to the extent feasible, be guided by rules. They shouldn't attack you because of your religion, or attack you because of your race, or your ethnic background, or because they don't like your looks. For instance, the police tackled some kid here the other day because they thought he was giving them inhuman stares. How do you determine that? You know, there are people that look askance at me all the time. And you too. And so you can, you know, that's where you, you know, we get the, you know, we start saying things like take a picture, it lasts longer, and all those kinds of things, because they're looking at us a little funny. So they should be guided by rules, that is, by openly acknowledged, relatively stable, and generally applicable statements of conduct. This is how you should conduct yourself. The evils to be retarded are caprice and whim. I don't like this guy, so we're going to attack him. The misuse of government power for private ends and the unacknowledged reliance on illegitimate criteria of selection. The goals to be advanced are regularity and even-handedness. The Bible calls even-handedness equity. And that's going to be one of the factors that is going to be common and worldwide in God's kingdom. Even-handedness and equity. There should be even-handedness in the administration of justice and accountability in the use of government power. You have to realize that I have power and I should use it wisely. I have to use it in a way that's going to benefit the people that I'm here to serve. I should not misuse it. You know, if I'm a judge in the land, should I accept bribes? Should I accept bribes? And trust me, that does happen. I know of a case that where that took place. The fellow was going to court, and his attorney was related to the judge. Before the case was ever decided, the fix was in. You see, when that kind of thing happens, and you know it happens, you become unhappy with the law courts, and you don't want to go there. That should not happen if the rule of law is in place. So it means, as we look at the rule of law, and it means that government cannot decide by caprice or whim to make a decision. For instance, you might think of it in terms of a baseball game. As you think of that baseball game, there are rules. And the game is only going to work if you follow the rules. For instance, if you hit a fly ball, and the person standing out on the field and catches the fly ball, or you hit a grounder to someone in the infield and they throw the ball and it reaches the first baseman's glove before you reach that bag, you're out. You catch the fly, you're out. They throw you out at first, you're out. Now what happens if you're up there as a batter? And if that ball comes between the letters and your knees and it's over the plate, that's a strike. You may not like it, but it is a strike. So if you begin to say, well, we're not going to follow the rules, we're just going to go any other way, we'll go anyway. So sometimes when there's a fly caught, you're out. And sometimes when you go to first base and you didn't make it in time, you're safe. People say, well, I'm not playing this game anymore. It causes people to be unhappy. And if you're an official, you may suffer the consequences of making those kinds of calls. But as we see here, that the scriptures vividly illustrate what happens when you violate the rule of law. A vivid example is found in 1 Kings chapter 21, in the example of King Ahab, Jezebel, and a man named Naboth. Ahab lived, in Jezreel, and he noticed that his neighbor Naboth had a very fine piece of property, and he wanted that piece of property to use it for a garden. It was right next to his property. So he went to Naboth and he said, hey, I'd like your property, and I will give you either another piece of property or I will pay you for it. Either way works for me. And what does Naboth say? He said, No, this is an inheritance given to my family in the time of Joshua, and I'm not going to give up this piece of property. It has certain value because it's an inheritance. It's something that's been passed down from generation to generation. I'm not going to give up the property. So what does Ahab do? He goes in to his house, lays down on his bed, and begins to pout. So his wife Jezebel comes in and notices that he's in this state, and she says, "What's wrong with you?" And so he explains that Naboth wouldn't sell his property. And what does she say? "Are you the king? Do you have all the power in the country or not?" And she says, "Don't worry about it. I'll take care of this." And she does. So she sent a letter to the nobles of Jezreel and said, "Gather together and invite Naboth as the chief person that will be at this banquet. And when you do, accuse him of blaspheming God and the king." They did, and they executed him. And word came back to Jezebel that her wishes had been carried out. And Ahab had his property. That is an illustration of not following the rule of law. There were multiple violations of law. And if you went to where Jezebel was from, that was commonplace because the king was all-powerful. They could do whatever they wanted. And that's been the problem with the world down through the centuries. And unfortunately, Israel, who was given the law to guide it, given the law to rule in the land, unfortunately, they began to follow the ways of the world. Jezebel introduced those things there. So the goal of law is even-handedness and accountability in the use of government power. So the government is to follow the rule of law, and when they don't do it, we all suffer the consequences, and it undermines your society. So it's interesting, what impact has this principle, the rule of law, had on our country, the United States of America? Paul Johnson wrote The History of the American People, and he points out something about Americans just after the Revolution. He says, "Next to religion, the concept of the rule of law was the biggest single force in creating the political civilization of the colonies. This was something they shared with all Englishmen. The law was not just necessary, essential to any civil society, it was noble. The law was seen as noble. And what happened in courts and assemblies on weekdays was the secular equivalent of what happened in church on Sundays. They valued the law. They knew it was essential to the functioning of their society. They were to follow it in their individual lives. They were to follow it in their dealings with their fellow Americans. And the government was to follow it. And as everybody did their part and esteemed the law in that way, then you had a civil society. The rule of law had developed in England, dating back to the days of William the Conqueror. Over the time, the concept of individual rights and limits upon government were developed. For instance, the Magna Carta limited the power of the king over the nobility. And eventually, through the strife that went on in England over this issue of the rule of law, the Parliament developed. You had lords and you had the ministers of Parliament, and you had a voice that was given to the common man. And it's all developed over time. And these concepts were carried to the New World by English colonists, and when the king began to cast aside and step on the rights of Englishmen, what did they do? They rose up in revolution to overturn the king. The idea of limits on government and the rights of the individual formed the basis of the Constitution of the United States. And for instance, do you realize the Constitution of the United States is unique? There's no other document in the world like it. The Constitution was formed as a result of reflection on law and the rights of man over centuries, and the Constitution brought together the best men and the best minds to put it together. And it's my personal belief that God inspired the development of the rule of law in Ephraim and in Manasseh so that those two peoples could rise 2,520 years after their fall, in order that the promises given to Abraham could be fulfilled. Thomas Sowell, in his book Conquest and Cultures, points out the following. He says that the British developed much earlier than many other peoples a framework of law and governance that was very helpful to economic transactions. For instance, do you want to do business with somebody you can't trust? Do you want to do business with somebody who will enter into a contract with you and then not fulfill that contract? And if there is no rule of law, you have no recourse. The rule of law in Britain not only helped it develop internally, but it also helped to attract to Britain, and to London in particular, much of the commerce of Europe. People want to do business where they trust that they'll get paid. And if there's a problem, that they have a place to go and resolve the problem. The rule of law developed in Britain caused people to have confidence that the commercial or financial obligations that were made would be honored. And Britain became renowned for that. They were meticulous in adhering to the rule of law. George Washington noticed this, and he basically said that without the rule of law, the United States is in trouble. If you look at the time that he was president, there were a lot of conflicts and things that had to be dealt with. And he basically said that the Constitution should be our guide. And he said that America was a country under the rule of law. And with the law, it was everything. And without the law, it was nothing. In summary, we see that Great Britain and the United States rose because God was fulfilling his promise to Abraham. And the rule of law was an important part of that. And the rejection of the rule of law is a key reason that Britain and the United States are in decline. We've rejected the rule of law. And I must also say at this point that that following the rule of law contributes to a positive society. And you can follow it and you have a positive society, but it's not necessarily the kingdom of God, but it is much more positive than if you don't have that in place. It's a society in which, our society is one in which we have to have a separation of church and state. Why is that? Because we don't trust that if we have the two combined, that the powers that be won't impose a religion on us. We have to have three separate branches of government because we don't trust that one is going to become more powerful than the other. So we have checks and balances. We've also included in the Constitution the Second Amendment. I know there are people that say that doesn't apply, but the reason they put it in there was because they said tyranny is common to human beings. And there come times when you have to rebel and you have to set up a new government. In summary, the rule of law is good because it serves to check the worst tendencies of mankind. Inherent in the need for the rule of law is the ever-present uncertainty about whether individuals or government will follow the rule, follow the law. So God's purpose in working all these things out and in working with us is to end the inconsistency we see in the world. The rule of law is a good thing, but we as a country are moving away from that, and you can see the problems that exist in our country as a result. The outcome isn't going to be good. As you look at the critics of the law, they see the law of Moses as a negative. They feel it was something that needed to be nailed to the cross. However, this approach lacks a fundamental understanding of the law, and God has revealed his law. I was just thinking about Bibles are available to all kinds of people. Everybody can read the law of Moses in whatever language. But people read it, but they don't think the law is all that necessary for them. As the Hosea 8, verse 12 in the Amplified Bible says the following, I wrote for him the 10,000 things of my law, but they are counted as a strange thing, as something which does not concern him. God's written all about law, but most people ignore it and don't see it as important. However, we need to realize whose law this is in the first place. Whose law is it? Is it my law? Is it the law of the United States? Is it the law of Israel? Let's go to Genesis chapter 26, verse 5. You probably thought, man, he's never going to get to the scriptures, but we are. Genesis chapter 26, verse 5. And he's speaking of Abraham, the father of the faithful, and he says in verse 5, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. He's telling you right here whose law it is. He says, it's mine. My laws, my statutes, my judgments. Abraham obeyed my voice, the things that I instructed him by voice. Go on to over to Deuteronomy chapter 11. Let's look at verse 1. Deuteronomy 11, verse 1. And this is speaking to Israel. Deuteronomy 11, verse 1. Therefore you shall love the Lord your God and keep His charge, His statutes, His judgments, and His commandments always. Whose law is it? It's God's law. It's God's law, not our law. It is a law that came directly from God. Proverbs also bring this out. Let's look at one other passage in Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 through 2. Guidance for young people. He says, my son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. Why? Why keep the commandments of God? Why keep His commandments? He says, for length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. So, following God's law tends to lengthen your life, and more than anything, walking in faith and keeping God's law helps us to live eternally. It's all part of being prepared for eternal life. So don't forget the law. Keep it in your heart. We know that one of the things that we've looked at as we've thought about Pentecost and God's Spirit and those kinds of things is something that Christ said in John chapter 14, verse 15, where he said, if you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, keep my commandments. So we see that this isn't a law of a particular human group of people or something that people thought up. These are God's laws that He revealed to humanity. It didn't come out of our mind. God spoke the Ten Commandments from Mount Sinai. God is the one with His own finger that wrote the Ten Commandments on the tables of stone. And God is the one who is writing the law in our hearts, as Christ works in us through His Spirit. So it is God's law, not our law. It is a revealed law. And it is to rule in our lives. And the ideal would be that the biblical laws that we see here would be applied in every life and in every government. What a change it would bring to the world. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 5. What was God's intention in giving us this law? God spells that out for us. And what was His intention? Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 29. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 29. And this is God's lament, God's desire for humankind. It was His desire for Israel, and it's His desire for everyone. He says in verse 29, oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and always keep all my commandments. That's God's desire, that humanity would keep all of His commandments. And that it might be well with them and with their children forever. How wonderful it would be if they would keep God's law. What a different world it would be. Verse 33, he says, "You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live and that it may be well with you and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess." Again, the emphasis upon by doing this, it will prolong your days. It will give you long life. As you think about Israel was given the law, but they didn't follow it. We've been given the law as well. Do we follow it? You see, God has given us not only the law, but He's given the Spirit, given us the Spirit. And Jeremiah said that there would be a time coming when the law would be written in the hearts of those people whom God would work with. And we can get into this dispute about, well, what law is he talking about? Well, think about what law was extant at the time that Jeremiah was prophesying. Was it the law of Christ? In one sense, you could say it was, but Christ didn't exist there. Christ had not come yet. So the only law that existed that is going to be written in the heart of God's people through the Spirit are the Ten Commandments. And all of the laws that derive from those Ten Commandments. They're being written in our hearts. And as we looked at Romans 8 at Pentecost, we talked about the fact that Jesus Christ came in order to condemn sin in the flesh, to bring about our forgiveness, to pay the price for our sin, to cover it so that we could be made just in God's sight. But it doesn't end there. Christ works in our lives to help us to understand the law, to be able to see it, and then to say, you know, this is how I should live. And to begin to live that way, and as we do fall short, we repent. And God is faithful and just to forgive us. But Christ lives in us for what purpose? That the just requirements of the law would be fulfilled in us. That we would be people governed by the rule of law. That we would learn to rightly use law. That we wouldn't use the law against somebody we didn't like or somebody who was our enemy. That's a misuse of the law. Or we would do it partially. Well, I like this guy, so I'll rule in his favor. But this other guy, I don't like him so well. No, it's got to be equitable. That's what God is seeking. He's seeking for those people to rule in the world tomorrow. So in summary, God's intention with man has been to develop righteous character. Each individual guided by and adhering to the rule of law. For us to become the same yesterday, today, and forever. Have we reached that point? Have we reached that point? You know, it's interesting. I've always been amazed by, let's say there's a riot. I happen to live in a place where riots were more than common in the Los Angeles area. So 1965, we have riots. So people that were law-abiding when the police were around, or at least relatively law-abiding, what did they do when there were no police around? Okay, we'll bust the windows out in this store and we'll just completely loot the store. And the quest that what God is looking for is if you happen to be walking by when they're all unloading all the TVs and all of the other paraphernalia in the store, you're going to keep on walking rather than saying, "Hey, free stuff today," and join the crowd. Pick up that big TV that you've been wanting or whatever you happen to want, that computer or whatever. It always amazes me that people lack that character, but it is... Just watch when there's a riot and people taking everything. Well, I deserve it. For one reason, they find justifications for all of that. God said, "I don't want you to be doing that. It's unacceptable for you to do as a Christian." So we want to be the same today and forever. However, the negative trend has been going for a long time. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. And Paul makes note of a trend that was going on even in his day. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7. Here he says, "For the mystery of lawlessness." What he's telling us is that even as he and the apostles were preaching the gospel to the world, they were turning the world upside down. There was a trend that was running counter to God and his plan. A trend of lawlessness. The mystery of lawlessness is already at work. It was taking place in his time, and it was something that he had to fight against throughout his ministry. It's something that all the apostles had to fight against. That's why Jude addresses law. That's why James addresses law. They were fighting a trend against the law of God. Paul fought it. We have to fight it. We have had to fight it, and as just as they did. The trend toward lawlessness. And as you look at our world is becoming more lawless. And as it becomes more lawless, it's more uncertain, it is more dangerous, and it's a trend we don't want to participate in. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24 and see Jesus Christ comment on this as he talks about the end of the age and what would be common to that time. Matthew chapter 24, verse 12. Matthew 24, verse 12. He says, "And because lawlessness will abound." This is speaking of the end of the age. "Because lawlessness will abound." And he's speaking about the world, yes, and we can see that trend. In your own government, you can see that trend. And it's not just the government. And if, let's face it, when the government begins to cease following the rule of law, what do you think is going to happen to the rest of society? Is it going to enhance following the rule of law? The law doesn't matter. I can drive any speed I want. I can do anything I want. That's a very dangerous trend. But it says lawlessness will abound. And as a result, the love of many will grow cold. You see, when lawlessness abounds, you're breaking the law. Then the love of many will wax cold. And you see it in our society. You see it in the things that people are beginning to do, and it's sad. But the saddest part about this verse is it not only refers to the world, but it refers to the church. As lawlessness begins to abound in the world, unfortunately, lawlessness begins to be a part of the church. Not the entire church, but it's a trend that finds its way into the church, as almost every trend in the world finds its way into the church, at least to some extent, sadly. But what you find is as lawlessness begins to abound, the love of many will grow cold. And that's a very bad trend for the church of God. But we see that, Christ said, this is what's coming. So be aware of it. Defend against it. Make sure you're ruled by the law, guided by the law. Because other people around you may not be. So you have to be familiar with it, and you have to be applying it to your life, and you have to be practicing it. And when you hear something that goes against the law, you're going to have to say, sorry, I'm not going there. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to act that way. Let's go to Romans chapter 13. Why do we love God's law? Romans chapter 13. Why do we love God's law? Chapter 13, verse 8. This is written by the Apostle Paul, and he says, "Owe no one anything except to love one another." That's the only debt you want to have. The only debt you want to have is that you should love God and your neighbor. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. As you think about other people, you think of them positively. You seek to serve them and help them wherever you can. Verse 9, "For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet." And where did those laws come from? I seem to recollect that they were spoken by the voice of God on Mount Sinai. Paul is pointing to which law he's discussing. And he says, "And if there is any other commandment, all are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself." Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. Love does no harm to the neighbor. What love does is build other people up. It encourages them. It helps them. It comforts them. That is what God is looking for. That's the consistency that God is looking for. One of the notions that's held by those who don't understand the rule of law is that those who believe in that principle are rigid, inflexible, and Pharisaical. And be assured of this, the law cannot be skirted or transgressed, because that is sin. And we know the wages of sin is death. We know that by the law is the knowledge of sin, as we learn from Romans 3, verse 20. We also know what Christ told the woman caught in adultery. What did he tell her? "Go and sin no more." That's what we are all told. We have to realize that, let's go back to Titus chapter 3. Titus chapter 3. So we understand that we've sinned and we understand certain things about it. But being a keeper of the law does not negate mercy and forgiveness. It doesn't negate mercy and forgiveness. Titus 3, verse 3. "For we ourselves were also once foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving various lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful, and hating one another. But when the kindness and the love of God our Savior toward man appeared, not by works of righteousness which we have done," we didn't deserve it, we didn't earn it, "God extended His grace to us because He's a merciful and gracious God. But according to His mercy, He saved us through the washing of regeneration and the renewing of the Holy Spirit, whom He poured out on us abundantly through Jesus Christ, our Savior." So God has shown mercy to us, and what are we to do? We're to be thankful that God has shown us mercy, and we're to show mercy as well. We aren't just rigid law keepers. Law is expressed in love, and we are to be merciful. We are to be forgiving. And one of the beautiful things about the character that we're developing, that we are the same yesterday, today, and forever, is what it says in 1 Corinthians 13. It says, "Love never fails." You see, when we become consistent like Christ, love never fails. One of the things you realize about this world is the world groans under the weight of sin. It groans under the weight of sin. The world suffers the consequences of sin. The world lives outside the protection of God. And so it suffers the disasters and horrors that come in this world. People don't stop to think, maybe we should turn to God. But what we do see and what we do note from the Scriptures, it tells us that the creation earnestly waits for the sons of God. Why is that? Why is that? It's because it needs that kind of leadership. It needs those kind of people to serve as judges, as teachers, as leaders, to show the world the way to live. To be individuals that will never, ever compromise with God's law. And they will always apply it equitably. This is the right path. You need to follow this path. It will bring you blessings. It will bring you happiness. Who's telling us that in this world? Nobody is. And that should be coming from the top. It should be coming from the leaders that rule us, but they don't tell us those things. Instead, you have people that are leaders that say the law doesn't matter. The world groans under the weight of sin, and the world is waiting for the revealing of the sons of God. We are those sons. This world is waiting on us. It's waiting for people who love the law. And let's close in Psalm 119, beginning in verse 97. Psalm 119, beginning in verse 197. Psalm 119 is a beautiful exposition of God's law, giving us great insight into it and from various perspectives. Psalm 119, verse 97. It says, "Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day." It's what I think about. It's what I think about. It's what we have to think about. So when you're on your job, you got to do your job. But you know what? As you go about your job, how do you do it? You go about it saying, you know what? I want to do my job in a way that would please God, a way that would fit with His law. So how can I do this in a way that would please God? Where I can apply the commandments. Maybe it would be to be respectful to the customers. Maybe it would be to be helpful. Maybe it would be to, you see the trash laying in the parking lot, you pick it up. Doing little things like that that are part of being a Christian. You think about it all day long as you go about your business. You have to think about your business, but you can also be thinking about God's law. Verse 98, "For you, through your commandments, make me wiser than my enemies." If you have enemies, wouldn't you like to be wiser than they are? That's kind of the key to success. So if you have enemies, I'd rather be wiser than they are. And the thing is, if you follow God's law, you will be. You'll know how to handle them. You'll know how to deal with them. And you know, as they are negative toward you, what do? Like it says in Romans chapter 12, you do what's right. You don't return evil with evil. You return good for the evil. Wow. But that's what God is looking for. That's what this world needs. "For your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the ancients because I keep your law. I have restrained my feet from every evil way that I may keep your word. I have not departed from your judgments, for you yourself have taught me. How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Through your precepts I get understanding. Therefore I hate every false way." That's what the world is looking for. That's what the world is longing for. We are to be individuals who follow the rule of law. And it's my hope that you better understand the concept, and more than anything, that we can all better apply it.